You've got the podcast of Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig, and we're about to get into a two-part interview with the renowned Roger Penrose. Part one today, part two next time. And yeah, it's been flooding down in Texas, including at my house. At this recording, we've had record flooding, but hopefully my microphone will stay dry, at least for the next few minutes. Oh, and by the way, have you seen our updated Reasonable Faith mobile app? You can download it right now and get some great new features, so definitely check it out. And it includes a way to donate to Reasonable Faith, an in-app donation, and your support keeps the work of Reasonable Faith happening all over the world. I know you agree, it's much, much needed. Now, you may have heard the name Roger Penrose, the prominent professor of mathematics at Oxford. Some of our listeners sent us some excerpts of this interview and asked for Dr. Craig's thoughts on it. The interview was conducted by Robert Kuhn, who has also interviewed Dr. Craig, and has a very interesting show on TV and on YouTube. Bill, Roger Penrose, you've quoted him a lot in your work.
He is one of the great mathematical physicists of our age, indeed of all time. He, with Hawking, formulated the Hawking-Penrose singularity theorem that established the inevitability of a Big Bang singularity at the beginning of time and space in the standard general relativistic model of cosmology. Universally respected physicist and mathematician.
He's interviewed by Robert Kuhn of Closer to Truth, a program you've been on as well, in this. And he's being asked what things really exist. Some of this touches on your work as well. Here's the video.
Roger, if I ask the question, what things really exist, to most scientists, they would say, the physical world, that's it. Why'd you ask me such a silly question?
Yeah.
Now, notice what Kuhn is talking about there. He's talking about materialism or physicalism. In fact, many philosophers would not identify the physical world as a thing that exists. They would say that is just your agglomeration mentally of all of the individual physical things that exist. Some would even say that the only things that exist are elementary particles, which then get shaped in different ways to make people and horses and chairs and buildings and planets. But that those things don't really exist. What really exists is just these elementary physical particles that are differently shaped or configured. So don't take with too great seriousness the idea that all that exists is just the physical world. What he really means there is everything that exists material or physical.
Well, I think often people take the view that there is another kind of reality, which is the mental reality. Certainly philosophers might take that view, and some would even regard the mental world as being, in some sense, primary. The physical world is somehow to be thought of as a construct from mentality. I don't particularly like that view, but in my view, you have to think of a third one. I'm sometimes accused of being not just a dualist, but actually a trialist, which is even worse.
Now, what's very significant here is that Penrose implicitly affirms the truth of dualism. He says, I'm not just a dualist, but a trialist, which implies that he is a dualist. Mm-hmm. That is to say, he believes that in addition to physical reality, there is a kind of mental reality or mind that is as real as the physical stuff that makes up the world. So that's highly significant, I think, that he is affirming here the reality of the mental. And he's going to affirm now a third realm of reality, which will have to do with the existence of mathematical objects.
But I think it's just a useful way of talking about things. In particular, mathematics seems to have its own kind of existence. It's very important in understanding the physical world that our way of describing the physical world, certainly at its most precise, has to do with mathematics, and there's no getting away from that.
Now, what that is an expression of the indispensability argument for mathematical objects. You notice he says there's no getting away from that. That is to say, when we do physical science, you can't get away from referring to mathematical objects of various sorts that are familiar to the mathematical physicist. And therefore, he says these things must exist. There must be these mathematical objects. Now, what's important to understand here, Kevin, is that there's a difference between being a realist about mathematical truth and being a realist about mathematical objects. You can be both, or you can be one but not the other. So there are many people who are anti-realists about mathematical objects. They don't think that the number two exists or that the set of natural numbers exists, but they are realists about mathematical truth in that they think that 2 + 2 = 4, and that there are an infinite number of natural numbers. They will affirm mathematical truths, but without mathematical objects. And I think Penrose glosses too quickly from the fact that there are mathematical truths to the existence of mathematical objects. And it will be interesting to see whether or not he endorses some sort of criterion of ontological commitment whereby these truths commit us to the reality of objects, or whether he just will gloss over that. So we'll have to see what he says.
But mathematics seems to have its own kind of existence. It's very important in understanding the physical world, that our way of describing the physical world, certainly at its most precise, has to do with mathematics, and there's no getting away from that. And that mathematics has to have been there since the beginning of time. It has an eternal existence, timelessness, really. It doesn't have any location in space, it doesn't have any location in time. Some people would take it not to have any location or not any existence at all, but it's hard to talk about science, really, without giving mathematics some kind of reality, because that's how you describe your theories in terms of mathematical structures.
Okay, there you see the slide or the gloss that I'm talking about. From the fact that mathematical truth is timeless and not in space, that it's valid eternally, he thinks there needs to be some kind of mathematical existence, and that there must be mathematical objects that these truths refer to. But that's a controversial position that requires some sort of argument to go from mathematical truths to mathematical existence. And so far we haven't heard him make that argument.
It has this also this relation to mentality, because we certainly have access to mathematical truths. But I think it's useful to think of the world as not being a creation of our minds, because if we do, then how could it have been there before we were around? Somehow, if the world is obeying mathematical laws with extraordinary precision since the beginning of time, well, there were no human beings and no conscious beings of any kind around then. So how can the mathematics have been the creation of minds and still have been there controlling the universe?
Now, this is a good argument against thinking of mathematical truths as the product of human conception. Namely, mathematics has been true forever, long before we arrived on the scene. That's quite right. And I think this is a devastating argument against a view called psychologism that would say mathematical objects are ideas in people's minds. But notice this wouldn't strike against divine conceptualism, which would say that they're ideas in God's minds or the creation of God's mind in some way, which would be either an absolute creationism or a divine conceptualism. So it will be interesting to see whether or not he thinks that mathematics could be grounded in the mind of God.
So I think it's very valuable to think of this Platonic mathematical world as having its own existence. So let's allow that and say that there are three different kinds of existence, maybe others, but three kinds of existence: the normal physical existence, the mental existence, which seems to have, in some sense, even greater realities, what we directly are aware of, what we directly perceive, and the mathematical world, which seems to be out there, in some sense, conjuring itself into existence. It has to be there.
All right. Now, notice here he has made this slide that I talked about without justification from being a realist about mathematical truth to being a realist about mathematical objects. Mm-hmm. And that requires an argument. In contemporary philosophy of mathematics, it usually involves some sort of criterion of ontological commitment. Namely, that if you assert a truth and you use terms to refer to certain individual things like numbers, or if you say there is or there are certain things, then you're ontologically committed to the things that you say there are or the things that these terms refer to. But that criterion can be challenged and has been challenged by a good number of thinkers today who would want to be objectivists like Penrose about ontological truth, but would question whether or not that implies Platonism with regard to these ontological objects. To make that move, that slide from truth to ontology, you need an argument. And he hasn't given that yet.
And then there's the relationship between these three worlds, which I regard as all three of them as somewhat mysterious, or very mysterious. So I think these, I sometimes refer to this as three worlds and three mysteries. And mystery number one is, how is it that the physical world does in fact accord with mathematics, not just any old mathematics, but very sophisticated, subtle mathematics, to such a fantastic degree of precision? So that's mystery number one.
So mystery number one is commonly known as the applicability of mathematics. And what makes this a mystery, Kevin, is that this Platonic realm of abstract objects, this third reality he believes in, are causally inert. They stand in no causal relations to anything. So they cannot impact the physical world. So how is it that this Platonic realm of mathematical objects is applicable to the physical universe? The Platonist has no answer to this mystery. By contrast, the theist, whether he be a Platonist or an anti-realist, has an answer to mystery number one. He says that the world exhibits a mathematical structure because it has been designed by God on the basis of such a blueprint. Mm-hmm. God had a mathematical blueprint or structure in mind, and he has constructed a world built on that blueprint. And so naturally, these mathematical truths then are useful and apply to the world in understanding the way the world is. So the first mystery that Penrose lays out is a mystery indeed for the Platonist, but it's not a mystery for the theist.
The sky is crying.
Okay, let's pick it up there next time as Professor Penrose continues to discuss these three mysteries of life. So, part two next time. Be sure and come back, and we'll see you then on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.
And I wonder, what can she be? One morning, she was one.